Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review was heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on credit cards when we come back. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you anyway, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself, and everything the government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you in your person, houses, papers, and effects, but it does not protect you from yourself. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. Because information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. It's knowing how much information is gathered, and what information is stored, and what information you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the right request for privacy. Now, always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you yourself haven't revealed by your own hand or your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for our free general law CD package? It's a 4-hour program. It's entertaining, it's informative, it's educational, and best of all, it's free. Just call the law school at area code 417-273-4967 and ask for yours. Again, that number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our webpage, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Credit cards. Everybody's got one. Well, nearly everybody's got one. I don't have any credit cards. I did at one time. I had 28 credit cards, and I couldn't handle them. Credit was more than I could handle. It got into higher finance, and I got into trouble with my credit cards. That was a lot of years ago now. Looking back 30 years, I had 28 credit cards on one side of my pocket and a letter of credit from the bank on the other side, and I thought I was wealthy and prosperous. Actually, I was in debt up over my head, and I couldn't pay my credit card bills. And I discovered something. And what I discovered was that I couldn't handle credit. And from what I can see here in the statistics and reports, most Americans can't handle credit either. So it made me feel a little bit better to know that it wasn't just me that couldn't handle credit, couldn't handle the credit card and the temptation that goes along with it. But now there's a greater problem than just not being able to handle the credit card wisely. It's a theft problem, identity theft. And if you've got a credit card, you don't have any privacy. Privacy is something that doesn't go hand in hand with credit cards. Every transaction that you make is paper trailed and detailed so that the IRS and government agencies can detail and follow your every move, your purchases, how much money you make and where you spend it and what you spend it on and so on. It's not very inducive conducive, I guess I should say, to privacy and privacy issues. But leaving the privacy aside, listen to some of these scary stories that deal with credit cards, and then we'll take a look and see whether or not there's a better way of life than credit cards. Now, this is a new one. People sure stay busy trying to cheat us, don't they? Now, a friend went to a local gym, and he placed his belongings in the locker. And after the workout and the shower, he came out, saw the locker was open, and thought to himself, well, that's funny. I thought I locked that locker. So he dressed, and then he flipped through his wallet to make sure that all was in order and everything looked okay. All of his cards were in place. Now, a few weeks later, his credit card bill came in. It was a whopping bill of $14,000. So he called the credit card company, and he started yelling at them and saying, that he did not make those transactions. Now, customer care personnel that the credit card company verified that there was no mistake in the system and then asked if his card had been stolen. He said no. But then he took out his wallet and he pulled out the credit card, and yes, you guessed it, a switch had been made. An expired similar credit card from the same bank was in his wallet. The thief who broke into his locker at the gym had switched his cards. So the credit card issuer said that since he did not report the card stolen earlier, that he would have to pay the amount that he owed to them. Now, how much did he have to pay for the items that he didn't buy? $9,000. Now, why were there no calls made to verify the amount that was stolen? Small amounts rarely trigger a warning bell, with some credit card companies anyway. So it just so happens that all the small amounts added up to one big one. So here's a little lesson to keep in mind. If you've got a credit card, you need to keep that credit card as secure as you would keep the personal papers, such as your marriage license and birth certificate and things like that, out of the hands of a thief. Now, identity theft is becoming very, very common, and pretty soon there'll be a solution to the identity theft problem. What they'll do is they'll put a chip in your right hand and in your forehead. It'll be injectable. In fact, it's becoming very, very common now. We're doing it in pets. In fact, we have a new law that's on the books. We're being asked now to identify, first of all of our animals, here in the United States anyway. And we're going to put these little rice-size grains under the skin of our animals, our chickens and our cows, and I imagine your dogs and cats also. That's where it's being experimented on right now. And now, of course, four or five states have adopted this new national identification program. And then what'll follow when the economy collapses? There'll be a big scene, of course, like the Great Depression of the 1930s. And then the government, which causes the problem to start with, will come up with a solution. He'll say, well, look, we've got all this identity theft going on over here, and the economy has collapsed, and we got to have a new monetary system, so we might as well start from scratch. And so here's what we'll do. Instead of foreclosing on your house and taking your car away from you because you're unemployed and can't pay your bills, you come down and get this chip in your right hand and in your forehead, and then we won't foreclose on you. And people will line up. You know, when you're faced with losing everything and giving up your personal privacy and taking on the mark of the beast, you'll love it. It'll be the only solution that's available to you, so you'll have to do it because there's nothing else available. That'll solve the credit card problem until people start cutting your hand off, killing you, and cutting your hand off so that they can steal from you. But leaving that question aside, here's scene two. A man at a local restaurant paid for his meal with his credit card. The bill for the meal came, and he signed it. The waitress folded the receipt and passed the card along, passed the credit card along to him. And usually he'd just take it and place it in his wallet or his pocket. Funny, though, he actually took a look at the card, and lo and behold, it was the expired card of another person. So he called the waitress over, and she looked perplexed. So she took it back, she apologized, and then hurried back to the counter under the watchful eye of this man. All the waitress did while walking to the counter was wave the wrong expired card to the counter cashier, and the counter cashier immediately looked down and took out the real card. There was no exchange of words, nothing. She took it and came back to the man with an apology. So here's the verdict. You make sure that the credit cards in your wallet are actually yours. You need to check the name on the card every time that you sign for something, and or the card is taken away for even a short period of time. Now, it's pretty obvious in this case that the waitress and the cashier were in on the scam. Obviously, if this had been an honest mistake, then they would have gone over, they would have looked at it, they would have talked one to another, and then they would have looked around. But then, why would this cashier have another credit card over there anyway? And why did they have this expired credit card over there to start with? You see, it could happen that if two waitresses came over with two credit cards, and then the cashier was making the transaction, she could get the two credit cards mixed up. But the two credit cards would both be good, wouldn't they? They wouldn't be expired. So right away, you can see here that waitresses and cashiers then, that is the employees that are working for businesses that you transact business with, are in on the scam of stealing credit cards because they're very lucrative. After all, if they can steal your credit card, and what better person is there to steal a credit card than a waitress? I mean, everybody's using their credit cards. And she takes it out and she makes $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 worth of purchases, and especially when they're small purchases, it never rings any alarm bells. How's that for us, for a program? So the verdict is, make sure the credit cards in your wallet are really yours. Check the name on the card every time you sign for something and or the card is taken away, even if you're right in the same room with them and they walk over and they work on it and they come back, make sure that it's your card. Many people just take back the card without even looking at it, assuming that it has to be theirs. Now, they do the same thing, you know, with change. Watch what happens. The bill is $14.38, and so the cashier hands you your change, $14.38, and they just hand you the change, and they say, 15, and hand you a 5.20, and there's your change made. So you take the change in your hand, stick it in your pocket. You don't count 50 or 60 cents worth of change now, do you? Now, start doing that, and what you'll find out is that when people do that, you know, they say, well, 14.38, 15, and then 5 is 20. What they're doing is they're stealing a dime for you. Now, if you're one of the guys like I am, and you actually take the change, you look at it, and you count it, and you see that there's 10 cents missing. So you say, well, should I say something? I mean, obviously, she made a mistake. She didn't make a mistake. She stole a dime. That's what it boils down to. Now, you just do that repetitively all day long, and you're going to do 100 of these transactions a day, and you steal a dime. You know, 3 or 4 times a day, somebody says, oh, wait a minute, you're short a dime. And they say, oh, I'm terribly sorry. They count it back out and say, you're right, I am short a dime. They pick up a dime and give it to you, or a quarter or something like that. And at the end of the day, they steal 10 bucks a day. Now, you do that, you know, 20 days, that's 200 bucks a month. So the cashier, just stealing dimes, can steal an extra $200 a month and put it in her pocket and never show up anything short on her books or on the cash register tape. So tuck that little theft away in your pocket, too. All right, many people just take back their credit card and assume that it's theirs. For your own sake, develop the habit of checking your own credit card every time it's returned to you after every transaction. Here's scene 3. Yesterday, I went into a pizza restaurant to pick up an order that I'd called in, and I paid by using my Visa check card, which, of course, is linked directly to my checking account. So the young man behind the counter took my card, swiped it, and then laid it on the counter as he waited for the approval, which is pretty standard procedure. So while he waited, he picked up his cell phone and he started dialing. So I noticed the phone because it's the same model that I have, but nothing seemed to be out of the ordinary. Then I heard a click that sounded like my phone sounds when I take a picture. He then gave me back my card and kept the phone in his hand as if he was still pressing buttons. So meanwhile, I'm thinking, I wonder what he's taking a picture of. Oblivious to what was really going on, it then dawned on me that the only thing there was my credit card. So now I'm paying close attention to what he's doing. He set his phone on the counter, leaving it open, and about 5 seconds later I heard the chime that tells you that the picture's been saved. Now I'm standing there struggling with the fact that this boy has just taken a picture of my credit card sitting on the counter during a transaction. Yes, he played it off well, because had we not had the same kind of cell phone, I probably would never have known what had happened. So needless to say, I immediately canceled that card as I was walking out of the pizza parlor. So all I'm saying is this, you've got to be aware of your surroundings at all times. You're under attack. If you've got a credit card, there are thieves out there that aren't just ordinary run-of-the-mill thieves. These are the very people that you're doing business with. It's the cashier. It's the waitress that's stealing your credit card information and selling it or using it or stealing it for themselves. So all I'm saying is that you've got to be aware of your surroundings at all times. And whenever you're using your credit card, take caution and don't be careless. Notice who's standing near you and what they're doing when you use your card. And be aware of phones, because many have a camera in the telephone these days. And when you're in a restaurant and the waiter, the waitress brings you your card and receipt for you to sign, make sure that you scratch the number off. Now, on that receipt, that's another one that was a very common ruse. You know, there's a copy, you know, that goes to the company there. Actually, that kid doesn't need to steal that. He's actually got a copy right there in his file. The actual expiration date and the number on your card. And stop and think about it for a minute. When you're making a telephone transaction to somebody and you're using a credit card to make this transaction, what is it that they want to know? They want to know the number and the expiration date. There isn't any way for somebody to verify who you are when you're in Los Angeles and you're making a purchase in Austin, Texas, or you're making a purchase, you know, in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So all they have to have from you is your number and the expiration date on your card, and they've got the information that they need to buy. They don't actually need the physical card itself. And that's the information that they're looking for. You got to guard that with your life. So when they got a receipt that comes down, you know, the copy, you know, on the other side, you need to take that carbon out of that and dispose of that personally yourself. And you better stay alert and on top of the credit card transactions and your billings every month, because you may have somebody over there with your credit card number. And if they're very wise, let me tell you a little story here about a thief. My old dad told me years ago, he said, you know, if you go out here and you steal a bunch, it raises a lot of red flags in a hurry. But he said, you could go over here and you can steal just a little bit all the time, and nobody will ever miss it. And so the cashier that's stealing the change, 10 cents with each and every transaction that goes through, she never gets caught, or he never gets caught, because when it's brought to their attention, it's an innocent mistake, isn't it? You can't show or you can't prove that they're stealing this dime from you. It's just a dime. If they did it with a $10 bill, see, you'd be on them, you know, in short order. But they're not stealing $10 bills. They're only stealing dimes. Now, just picture this. The guy has your name and number. I mean, he's got your credit card number. And instead of stealing, you know, $14,000 right away in a hurry, what if this guy just goes out and steals $25 a month? But he does it every month, and he does this month in and month out and year in and year out. You know, a lot of people, they get their credit card bills. They don't run over their credit card bills or their checking account and then run down and check their checking account and balance their checking account and make sure that each and every check has been returned. Most people are pretty careless about keeping their books. And the same thing is true with credit cards. And they're stealing 25 bucks a month from you, month in and month out. Now picture this, they get the numbers off of 50 or 75 cards, and they're stealing 25 bucks a month. It doesn't even raise an interest in the people that are being stolen from. They just pay the 25 bucks. If you stole 250, they might catch it, but not 25. So tuck that one away in your heart. So he played it off well because in this case, this guy had a telephone that actually had the camera in it. And then he knew what this guy was doing, but the average guy wouldn't know. I wouldn't have known what he was doing. Some restaurants are using only the last four digits, but a lot of them are still putting the whole thing on there. I've already been a victim of credit card fraud, and believe me, it's not fun. The truth is that they can get you even when you're careful, but don't make it easy for them. So forward this to as many people as you can think of, and let's get the word out and just be aware. Little piece that came in over the wire. Let's see if we're where it came from. I don't have a... Oh, it came from J. Richard Nemelia. Nemelia. Scams. Be alert. Secured credit card marketing scams. Ads like this. Now, here's a credit card. Anyone can qualify for a major credit card. Separated, divorced, bankrupt, widowed, bad credit, no problem. Here's the telephone number. Make the call now and get the credit that you deserve. Even if you've been turned down before, you owe it to yourself and your family. Your major credit card is waiting. Now, the telephone number here, write this number down. It's 900-555-1111. And here's the kicker. Here's the thing you should be alert to. Look at that 900 number. See that? That's not a toll-free number. That number is going to cost you some bucks. Now, ads like this may appeal to you if you have a poor credit history or no credit at all. You need to be aware. While secured credit cards can be an effective way to build or to establish your credit history, some marketers or secured cards make deceptive advertising claims to entice you to respond to their ads. Not that they're going to give you the credit or the credit card. What they're interested in making money on, you put this ad out. And let's suppose that 100 people respond to this ad. And you just pick up the telephone, you say, well, that's really good. I need a credit card. And I'd like to have a credit card. And my credit's bad because they took my credit cards away from me. And so you dialed the number, without thinking that this is 900. And this 900 number is costing you about a dollar a minute. And they keep you on the telephone for, let's say, 5 or 10 minutes. And they take down all of your information, and when they get all through over there, you've spent $5 or $10 on your phone bill and transferred $5 to $10 to the other side over here. And this guy, what his scam is that he's got this 900 number, and all he's doing is talking on the telephone and getting paid a dollar a minute. It's almost like old Brer Rabbit, getting paid a dollar a minute for guarding the tar baby. A dollar a minute. Well, that's $60 an hour. That makes wages, doesn't it? $60 an hour. If this guy could get on the telephone, and just start talking to people, that are calling in over there at 1-900, all of a sudden, that's a scam. Now, he's not going to give you the credit. He's not going to give you the credit card. He's not going to give you what you want. But you're going to pay $5 or $10 trying to get it and probably never figure out what happened to you. Hell, even if he kept you on the phone for 5 minutes, he made $5. He's not going to give you anything in return. Now, secured and unsecured cards can be used to pay for goods and services. However, a secured card requires you to open and maintain a savings account as security for your line of credit. An unsecured card does not. So what that means is if you're going to get a secured credit card, you got to actually have the money in the bank. Well, if you've got the money in the bank, why do you need the credit card? I mean, you've already got the cash, haven't you? So that's what they call a secured credit card. They want to make sure that they're going to get paid. And so if you want the credit card, which makes a lot of sense because, a lot of times people that don't know how want to rent a car, and you can't rent a car without a credit card. Well, most people don't think they can rent a car without a credit card. Let me tell you a little story here. Years ago, I didn't have a credit card, and so I called the car company. It was Avis at the time, and I think they were still in operation. So I called Avis and I said, I don't have a credit card and I like to rent your cars when I travel. What do I need to do? And he said, what you need is an Avis card. So, well, what is an Avis card? Well, you send us $235 and we put that on deposit. and we send you a card so that you can rent a card because you've got a $235 deposit on hand with us, and that you don't need a major credit card. See how simple that is? So you bring the car back, and it's not full of gas, and they just deduct it off of your $235. So you don't need a credit card or a major credit card like Visa or MasterCard to rent a car. What you need is the car rental agency's card, and you have to get that in advance, and it doesn't cost you anything. The car doesn't cost you anything, but you have to put up a deposit, and probably the deposit's more than $235 today, but the moral of the story is you got a deposit on hand, you can rent a car before you go. So the required savings deposit for a secured card may range from a few hundred to several thousand dollars. Your credit line is a percentage of your deposit, typically 50 to 100%. Usually a bank will pay interest on your deposit. In addition, you also may have to pay application and processing fees, and sometimes totaling hundreds of dollars. So before you apply, be sure that you ask what the total fees are and whether they will be refunded if you're denied a card. Typically, a secured card requires an annual fee and has a higher interest rate than an unsecured card. Now, deceptive ads and scams. The Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, has taken action against companies that deceptively advertise major credit cards through television, newspapers, and postcards. The ads may offer unsecured credit cards, secured credit cards, or not specify a card type. These ads usually lead you to believe that you can get a credit card simply by calling the number listed. Sometimes the number is not toll-free. A 900 number service for which you're billed just for making the call may instruct you to give your name and address to receive a credit application or give you a list of banks offering secured cards. And it also may tell you to call another 900 number at an additional charge for more information. Deceptive ads can often leave out very important information. Information such as the cost of the 900 call, which can range from $2 to $50 or more. The required security deposit, application and processing fees, or the eligibility requirements like income or age, and an annual fee, or the fact that the secured card has a higher than average interest rate on any balance. So here's how to avoid the scam. To avoid being victimized, look at the following signs. Offers of easy credit. The offer of easy credit. Hey, listen, that should put up a big red flag. No one can guarantee to get you credit. And so, before deciding whether to give you a credit card, legitimate credit providers examine your credit report. Credit report. That's what's going to determine whether or not you get a credit card. A call to a 900 number for a credit card. So here's another big red flag. When you see 900 number, scam, you're paying for calls with a 900 prefix and you may never receive a credit card. And then third, credit cards offered by credit repair companies or credit clinics. These businesses also may offer to clean up your credit history for a fee. However, you can correct genuine mistakes or outdated information yourself by contacting the credit bureaus directly. Remember that only time and good credit habits will restore your credit worthiness. Now, on credit reporting, if you're considering a secured card as a way to build or reestablish a credit record, make sure that the issuer reports to a credit bureau. Your credit history is maintained by companies called credit bureaus. They collect information that is reported to them by banks, mortgage companies, department stores, and other creditors. So if your card issuer doesn't report this information to the credit bureau, then the card isn't going to help you to build any credit history. Now, if you'd like more information to build a credit record, To build a credit record, you may want to apply for a charge card or a small loan at a local store or lending institution. Ask if the credit reports transactions, or if the creditor, rather, reports transactions to the credit bureau. If they don't, you don't need the card. If they do, and if you pay back your debts regularly, then you'll build a good credit history. If you can't get credit on your own, you can ask a relative or friend with a good credit history to act as your co-signer. The co-signer promises to repay the debt if you don't. Now, I'm going to put a little caveat by that one. There's six scriptures in the Bible that tell you not to act as a co-signer, whether the guy's a relative or not. So, you know, let the buyer beware. I wouldn't sign for my own child, much less for somebody else. Now, if you're having problems paying your bills, then you may want to contact a credit counseling service. Nonprofit organizations in every state counsel consumers who are in debt. Counselors try to arrange a repayment plan that is acceptable to you and your creditors. And they also can set you up as a realistic budget. These counseling services are offered at little or no cost to consumers, and you can find the office nearest you by checking the white pages in your telephone directory. If you get a credit problem over here, just call your credit card company and tell them, hey, I'm in trouble, and I need a credit counselor, and they'll probably send you to one of their own. And sometimes nonprofit counseling programs are operated by universities, military bases, credit unions, and housing authorities. They're likely to charge little or nothing for their services, or you can check with your local bank or consumer protection office to see if it has a list of reputable, low-cost financial counseling services. Now, banks do that because they want to get paid what you owe. So the bank has a financial interest in it, and so they're not interested in charging you a big fee for the credit counselor. They're interested in getting you back on a budget that you can service the debt on your credit card. After all, they're making big bucks on the interest, especially if you're a slow-pay credit card user just paying the minimum balance. Now, about a third of credit card users are called deadbeats in the credit industry because they pay their bill off in full every month and pay no interest. So they're using the credit cards then for the conveniences that the credit card offers, but they're not paying any interest on the card. There may be a fee that they pay every year, you know, to have the card, but other than the fee, then they're not paying that interest. Now, that interest, you know, at 15 or 20%. Using the rule of 72. If you take 72 and divide the interest into it, let's just take, for instance, 72. Let me divide that by 5% interest. It takes 14.4 years for it to double. But when they're charging you interest at 15%, so let's take 72 and divide that by 15, and the total amount on your card will double every 4.8 years. So if you had a credit card balance of $10,000 and you have an interest rate of 15% and you're making your minimum payments on that card, and if that card would pay out in 5 years, it would cost you $20,000 to amortize a $10,000 loan over 5 years. Now think about that. That's called the magic of compounding. Watch what happens when it goes up to 27%. You take the 72, divide that by 27% interest, and the amount that you owe doubles every 2.66 years. So about every 2.5 years, about every 30 months, the amount of money that you're paying in interest equals the amount of money that you're paying on. How do you like that? So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, if you've got a problem, the place to complain is called the FTC. That's the Federal Trade Commission. Works for the consumer to prevent fraudulent, deceptive, and unfair business practices in the marketplace and to provide information to help consumers spot, to stop, and then avoid them. To file a complaint or to get free information on consumer issues, just visit www.ftc.gov. It's an easy one. It's www.ftc, that's Federal Trade Commission, ftc.gov. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, our schedule, and the archives, and it can be accessed through our website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, newspapers, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or that we recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management or the staff of this network, or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. And one last reminder, we're offering a new class on health and healing, which covers the alternative healing methods being used for the treatment and healing of the botch of Egypt, commonly known as cancer, a disease that now affects about one out of every two Americans, 50% of us, and how to prevent degenerative diseases, abdominal fat, and to use the application of essential oils, super nutritional foods containing more nutrients and fewer calories. And the list of things that we're covering in this class could get pretty long. The class also includes hands-on teaching, paperwork, allergic reaction testing and training so you can do it at home yourself, acupressure application and training so you can find the pressure points, and much, much more to contribute to your ongoing health. This class will be coming in February. That's February 5th through the 9th here in Isabella. If you're interested, call my wife Jackie here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Remember, my wife now is a 28-year cancer survivor. And we're not going to use a lot of five-syllable, double-jointed, knee-action words that impress PhDs and confuse all of us plumbers, carpenters, and electricians. All right, talking about credit card scams. Peter John White wrote an article here on credit card scams. You can go to www.peterwhitecycles.com. It's all one word. It's www.peterwhitecycles, just like it sounds, .com. Having a good web business since 1997, I've gotten used to scam artists trying to extract cash or free products from me. Most of these scammers are from Nigeria and Indonesia, where credit card fraud is considered a sport, much the same as soccer. Only the participants get paid better. Now, their most common ploy is to place a large order for bike parts. One guy ordered 14 sets of Mavic wheels from us, and he sent me 3 credit card numbers and asked me to split the charge among the 3 cards. All 3 cards had the same first 12 numbers, only the last 4 numbers were different, and of course the cards were not his. So what he does is he starts with a Visa number that he knows is good, and then he finds a Visa MasterCard vendor who will cooperate with him. He has the vendor try a series of numbers and expiration date starting from the good number that he already has. So if the good card has a number on it, let's say it's 6335 as the last 4 numbers, he tries to run a small charge using 6336 as the last 4 numbers. He also has to try many expiration dates. It's a time-consuming process, but potentially very profitable. Now, if that works, he just voids that charge, and he knows that he can use that number, that credit card, for a scam in the future when he really wants to make a score. He just keeps repeating the process until he has a whole pile of credit card numbers that he knows are good numbers. Now, next, he needs to find a sucker to take his order and ship it. Now, since the card numbers are good, a vendor in the United States might just run the charges. Let's say it's a $12,000 purchase spread over 4 cards, and then ship the goods by way of FedEx or UPS. It could be 3 weeks before the U.S. vendor gets a notice from his bank that the charges have been disputed by the rightful card owner, who, it turns out, lives in Illinois, not Nigeria. But by then, the goods have arrived in Nigeria, and there's simply no way to get these goods back. Now, the vendor is out not only the cost of the goods, but the shipping charges as well. And the rightful owner of the card is out some $50 or so, plus a lot of time dealing with the issue and getting a new card account number. Now, what all of this means to the average consumer is that in order to have a crook use your credit card number, the crook never has to actually see your card. The crook doesn't even have to know who you are or where you live. He doesn't care. He doesn't need to care, because lots of customers' addresses is, or customers' addresses correct, or ask for the V code on the back of the card, the last 3 numbers in the signature box on the back. So anybody with a credit card can become the victim of a scab, even if you never use the card. And you could be a guy that never even uses your card. You just have it in case of an emergency, like having a cell phone, you know, in your car. What's happened here is that credit cards now are actually a liability, and the credit card companies are going to have to go to the mark of the beast. And I think that's why God gave us a warning concerning this mark of the beast in Revelation 13, verses 16 through 20 or so. There's a little warning in there that says that you won't be able to buy, sell, or trade without the name or the number or the mark of the beast. Well, we're headed toward a cashless society. I was talking to a service station guy not too long ago, and I asked him, well, what is the proportion of cash sales in your daily business? And he said 7%. 7% in a gas station are cash purchases. Now, this isn't one of those, get-and-goes kind of places. This is a regular, everyday, garden-variety gas station and garage. And the guy says only 7% of people are actually paying cash. The rest of them all use credit cards or checks. So tuck that one away in your heart. If you get a credit card, boys and girls, you're vulnerable. You got to stay on top of that credit card so that when you see a purchase that comes in that you didn't make, you call the credit card company immediately. I think you have 3 days from the time the knowledge comes into your brain, maybe a little longer in certain companies. There's also insurance you can buy against your credit card being scammed. Insurance companies are getting in on the act now. And for a small premium, you can buy insurance now to protect you from a credit card thief. But credit card theft is becoming so common that it's, it's like stealing cars. It used to be very rare. I never heard of this, 30 years ago. I never heard of credit card scams and thefts and one thing and another. I suppose people could have done it there, but boy, people are really getting onto it now. All right, so there's the story on the bicycle and the Nigeria parts over there. So my advice is to regularly check your credit and card balance online to see if there's any charges that you didn't make. And if you accept credit cards in your business, I recommend that you never ship outside the United States to any address other than the billing address of the credit card itself. And then confirm with your credit card provider that the address that the customer gives you is correct. And be sure to get the V code from the back of the card. And never ever ship to Nigeria or Indonesia without first being paid in full by way of Western Union. And don't ship until you have the cold cash in your warm hand. Don't accept foreign cashier's checks either. They can be forged very easily. And it'll be weeks after you have deposited the cashier's check before you find out that it isn't any good. Now, the risk of dealing with people from Nigeria and Indonesia is very high simply because the governments there are so corrupt. And if you're able to contact the police in either country, chances are they know the scammer personally, and maybe he's a relative. The scammer may well be related to the local police chief, so don't waste your time trying to contact the government to report the problem. I've sent faxes to local police departments in both countries detailing the activities of credit card scammers in their towns, and I've never even heard back from them. But you can have some fun with these jerks. When I get the order, they always come in by way of email. I immediately call the issuing bank and report the card numbers. Then after a few hours, I email the scammer back saying that one or more of the card numbers he gave me were declined by the bank. So within a few hours, I'll have another email from the crook giving me several more credit card numbers, usually with the same first 12 digits. So then I called the bank and give them those numbers. And, of course, as soon as I called the numbers into the bank, the accounts are closed and the true card owners are notified. Then I email the scammer again and say that the new card numbers have also been declined. What would you like me to do? Well, would you like me to pay, or would you like to pay by way of Western Union or a cashier's check? Or does he have another credit card that he'd like to use? Invariably, another email comes in with several more card numbers, and the process goes on. Eventually, I tell the crook that everything is now fine and the order has been shipped. Now the crook gets very excited and he wants to know the tracking number for the order. Emails will arrive every hour or so asking for the tracking number. If I reply, it's to say that the computer we use for shipping is out of order at the moment, so I can't give him the number. But perhaps if he calls me later in the day, I can give it to him. Then a few hours later, the phone rings. It's the scammer, and he wants the tracking number. But the line seems bad, and gosh, I can't hear him very well. Could he perhaps call back? He calls again. This gets repeated several times until I get bored and ask him for some more credit card numbers so I can call the bank and give those numbers to the bank so that those accounts can be closed also, like I did with all the other numbers that he sent previously. At some point in time, I hear a click on the phone. Now, as of June of 2005, these scams were so common that I'm getting three or four large orders a day from these creeps. As you can well imagine, I don't have time to spend wasting my time on these scam artists. I just delete everyone that comes in. I've also been getting emails from people who have either been scammed or have been targeted by scammers. And I've learned about a few more scams. One that's slowly catching on is the wire transfer scam. A Nigerian will place a large order and ask to pay by way of wire transfer. You might think that that's pretty safe since nobody but you can do a transfer from your account to another. But the internet is making life very easy for these thieves these days, and you know how that you can set up with your fitness center or whatever to them or whatever to have them automatically get their monthly fee transferred from your bank account to theirs. Somehow these scammers can set up with your bank to do the same thing or at least something similar as long as they have your account number and the identification number of your bank. So what happens is you give the scammer your bank account number and any other information that he would need to wire you money. And then he can go to your, go to this website. It's http://www.qchex.com. And from there, he pretends to be you. He creates an account with Q checks and then places an order with some other vendor promising to pay with a Q checks check. The unsuspecting vendor receives a Q checks check and then ships the order. You never see a wire transfer to your account from the Nigerian. What you do see is a Q checks check drawn on your account. And you call your bank and say, "What's this?" And the bank explains it to you. And you tell them that you never heard of Q checks. So the bank then returns the Q checks check to the unsuspecting vendor who is out of the value of the check since he's already shipped the goods to Nigeria. Bottom line. Never give your bank details to anyone that you're not absolutely sure is a legitimate business. And finally, I'm not a clearinghouse for internet scams, nor am I here to give you advice on what to do if someone attempts to scam you. I can't respond to emails about this subject. I offer this article simply to help others. It's the least I can do. Signed by Peter White, a legitimate merchant who has been scammed a couple of times. Now, if these scams here sound like to you they're pretty complex. They are. I never heard of Q checks, and I found that the logical thing for me to do in life is don't have credit cards and don't have bank accounts. So I live my life without a bank account. And I deal in gold and silver coin, just like the scripture tells us to. And I never have my identity stolen, because if you stole my identity, what are you going to do with it? I don't have any credit. And it's your credit that they're after. That's what they're after, the credit. So when you deal in hard money, all of a sudden you don't have any credit. And I don't need any credit. If you got money, what do you need credit for? I mean, it's like having one of those debit cards. You know, I mean, if you got the money, why do you need the card? You say, "Well, I need the card so I can rent a car." Get a card from the company. Put a deposit in. It's like you do with the electric company and the phone company. Just give them a deposit. And they got the use of your money, and you can rent their cars, and business is fine. And then if you decide you don't want to rent their cars anymore, just send their card back and say, "Send me my deposit back." Now, there's a number of ways over here that we can reduce credit card fraud for internet merchant accounts. Suggestions from our readers. 8 surefire strategies that any business owner can use to reduce credit card fraud. Credit card fraud, 21 tips to protect yourself. Internet scam busters, 21 credit card fraud prevention tips. And credit card fraud, and types of fraud that are going on. We'll talk more about these credit card frauds and all these various and sundry neat little programs that maybe you've never heard of before. If you're one of those that has a credit card and you say, well, I'm not going to give up my credit card just because there's a lot of fraud going on out there, then it'll be up to you to know what each and every one of these frauds are if you want to protect yourself against credit card fraud. Again, you need to be on top of your credit card account constantly. If you're a merchant, you need to be aware of the scams that are going on. As this guy, Peter White, points out, he says, hey, listen, you know, the first time that this came into him, he says, wow, look at this, a $12,000 order. He calls the credit card numbers in, and the credit card numbers are good. You know, that's pretty tempting. You're a businessman. You get a $12,000 order coming across your desk, and all of a sudden you say to yourself, wow, the credit card numbers are good. And here's a $12,000 order. Now you want to tuck this away in your heart. You know, we're all motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. The five motivators of human nature. Now, of course, like this Peter White, first time this happened to him, he gets a call from Nigeria, $12,000 bicycle order. He wraps up the order. The credit cards are good. He puts the money in the bank, and 3 weeks later, the money is taken out. He's out his goods and finds out that, hey, the chief of police in this town is probably the culprit that's in on the scam if he's not doing it himself, because these governments are corrupt. And he got burnt once, and so he said, hey, listen, let me help the rest of you people out there by sharing with you some vital information. So next time on the Law Hour, an editorial review, we'll be taking a look at some more of these credit card frauds, 21 tips to protect yourself from credit card fraud. My advice, get rid of the credit card. If you don't have the credit card, you cannot be credit card scammed. Well, can you? I mean, how are you gonna scam me on my credit card if I don't have one? Let me give you a reminder here that we're offering a new class on health and healing, which covers the alternative methods. This is alternative healthcare. Alternative healthcare from the Bible. The Bible has a wild concept in health care. It's a wild new idea called nutrition. And cancer here in the United States now affects 50% of us. That is, in our lifetimes, your lifetime, 50% of us are going to get cancer. And they tell us by the year 2020, they're guaranteeing us 100%. 100% of us will get cancer in our lifetimes. So, we're gonna put on a class here and show you how to prevent degenerative diseases and abdominal fat from the biblical point of view. The use of application of essential oils, super nutritional foods containing more nutrients and fewer calories. And the list of things that we cover in this class could get pretty long. The class also includes hands-on teaching, paperwork, allergic reaction testing and training. So you can do it at home. Acupressure application and training so you can find the pressure points and much more to contribute to your health. That'll be February the 5th through the 9th. Just call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. I gotta give you a final reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our webpage. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Here, time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.